This week, we have analysis of the Batman vs. Superman trailer, plus discussion of the Gotham mid-season finale. That's at the 27-minute mark. Supergirl is the topic at 34 minutes. And we round out the show with the Arrow Flash crossover. That's at minute 56.
And now, from the Fortress of Solitude, deep beneath the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, sci-fi4me.com presents The Rogues Gallery.
Welcome, everyone. This episode of The Rogues Gallery. Jason Hutt here in studio with the official program observer, James, sitting across the table from me. And joining me by Ensible from all over the country and in Corpus Christi, Texas, my Sci-Fi XY co-host, Sonia Rodriguez, is here.
Hello.
And by the by, we have just uploaded the entire first season run of XY over on podcast.com, so you can check that out. Hopefully, it'll give us a little bit better statistics and analytics than what we've been getting, so be sure to check that out. And joining from Fort Worth, Texas, cosplayer and contributor Jeff Hackworth.
Howdy.
Who makes a really good penguin. He does.
Thank you.
And here in Kansas City, our Arrow recap contributor, Jacob Eliashar.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
And filmmaker and the originator of the web series, as far as we can determine, Mr. Kendall Sin joins us as well.
Greetings, everyone.
Okay, so let's start, speaking of film, let's start, because last week, during Jimmy Kimmel, which seems to be the thing to do anymore, we had the new trailer for Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. Bum, bum, bum! this is something that Tim and I talked about a little bit on the most recent episode of H2O, but we want to get into it a little bit more in depth here. One thing that we noticed right off the bat is that there is probably more humor in this trailer than in Man of Steel in its entirety.
Yes.
I'm just sitting here looking at everybody, you know, staring at their computers, you know, while we're all talking on Google Hangouts. And as soon as we mention this trailer, the looks are priceless. we all kind of have this, I'm nervous. Yeah. Should I talk about this?
Yeah.
Go ahead. That was my aside.
Well, it's one of those things where, you know, Man of Steel, there was so much expectation going into the DC Cinematic Universe, and then we got Man of Steel, and a lot of people were disappointed, and there's this expectation that the films are going to be, you know, grimdark and, you know, Frank Miller, Watchmen, Dark Knight Returns, Killing Joke in its tone, and certainly I think we're going to get that with Suicide Squad, but it is good to see a little bit more fun injected into this sequel, even though I don't think that the sequel is going to be any much better than Man of Steel myself personally. But, you know, as we do this, you know, the obligation to be objective is still kind of there. So I'm trying to keep an open mind, even though it's, you know, very difficult to do at this point.
Oh yeah.
what?
I'm just gonna come out and say it. My first impression of the trailer was I thought it was a fan-made joke. I was like, wow, this is really good for a fan film. And then I realized it was an actual trailer, and I was like, oh crap.
Well,
10 times since, and it has grown on me. I don't know if it's just because the initial shock has worn off, or if, like I said, the humor is not bad. I like that injection. I don't know that the jokes are good jokes.
Yeah.
And I honestly...
Forced.
Yeah. I mean, and they're old jokes. You know, it's like, did you invite her? Oh, I thought she came with you. Wow, that's lazy.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, is, you know, I think, and we can get into this a little bit more detail, I think there's too much in the trailer. I think it gives away too much.
Well, I
think it ruins the whole movie. Like, it shows the whole movie.
Yeah.
Batman and Bruce Wayne, Clark Kent meet. They argue a bit. And Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
They argue a bit. And then Doomsday comes in, and then they make up, and then Wonder Woman joins them to fight Doomsday.
Right.
Then Justice League.
Let's talk about Doomsday really quickly. That was the most scariest what the hell I have ever seen from a DC. Doomsday, they're really throwing the kitchen sink within this one.
No. I'm going to disagree.
It looks like a mix between a Ninja Turtle from last year's Ninja Turtles movie.
Did you see the meme out there? And some people have put a mask on him to make him a Ninja Turtle. Yeah.
And can I just say that I really appreciate the retro 2005 CGI special effects that they're using.
Yeah.
It looks like a Ninja Turtle and Abomination from The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
And Goomba from Mario Brothers all merged into one.
Well,
they said that it was possibly not finished, so I'm crossing my fingers that that's the case, that it's not finished.
I'm going to hold out.
Yeah. Well, at least he looked a little bit better than Smallville Doomsday, but not by much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not very much of a stretch. Although, you know, it's good that he didn't have the flippered hands. You know, because I know Michael Shannon was making that joke early on and people were freaking out. Also the fact that we're even seeing this, and Jacob, I'm gonna disagree with you a little bit on the kitchen sink comment that you made, because if they were throwing the kitchen sink into this particular film, we would have Darkseid. And so far we haven't had any indication, there's no rumor that Darkseid is showing up in this, even though, despite the fact that we do see some flying creatures in one particular scene where Batman is fighting the Superman squad in the desert. Turns out, we've got a giveaway during a press a presentation at Comic-Con Experience 25. Costume designer Michael Wilkinson was talking about his work on the film, and he either confirmed or he let slip that all of this stuff happening in the desert is a nightmare for Bruce Wayne. It's not a real thing. It's either a hallucination or it's a projection forward of what could happen if Superman decides he wants to be a god and da 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 da. So this is not even going to be a plot point so much as it's, you know, Bruce Wayne's worst nightmare come true. There's a rumor that there's a music track on the score called Nightmare with a K, and it goes through this. Apparently this entire thing is a dream sequence.
They're so clever.
Well, they didn't learn anything from Dallas.
Yeah, this is Bobby Ewing all over again.
I've also heard people are saying that Jesse Eisenberg plays Lex Luthor's son.
Yes, that actually has, I think, not really got any official confirmation, but he apparently is playing Alexander Luthor Jr. because there's been some online stuff talking about Lex Luthor in the press and how Eisenberg's character is Lex Luthor, the second Lex Luthor.
Is he from Quark? Because Alexander Luthor is not a safe character in Crisis.
No, he's not.
Hey, Jason, quick comment. I thought I was watching Jerome, Cameron Mottigan, instead of Jesse Eisenberg, because that gave me a vibe.
He did feel like the presentation, it did feel like I've heard Jim Carrey playing the Joker playing Lex Luthor.
That's too much.
But that is the vibe. I mean, it really does.
I agree. Like, we were watching it, and like Sally and I, she was watching it over my shoulder, and got to the Lex Luthor part, and she just started cracking up.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that's what they're going for.
Well, unless, Tim and I talked about this, he's posited the theory that he could be doing a little bit like Kevin Spacey was doing in Superman Returns. Will you play the guy, you know, play him fast and loose in order for the turn into the vile villain gangster evil to have even more impact. Because we do see in that one spot, apparently he's got Lois Lane as a hostage. And he makes that comment, you know, a three-syllable word for somebody who doesn't get it. You've got that. There's a potential there for Eisenberg's Luthor to be going both ways. He does the whole silly. Well, it's kind of like Bruce Wayne and Batman. Bruce Wayne plays this rich playboy, care nothing, do a layabout, and you know, the goof who doesn't have any sense of responsibility at all. He just, you know, is just party all the time. And then you've got Batman, who's, you know, Batman, where with Lex Luthor, you've got Lex Luthor, the crazy, eccentric, la-di-da boy genius, and flip the coin, and he's this evil, manipulative, Machiavellian type of character who is really, really, I mean, when he, you know, he can be fun and charming and disarming on the one hand, and then you flip him around, and he's like, I'm the worst thing that you've ever encountered. You know, that we think maybe some of that might be in play. Maybe.
I view him as a fanboy, like Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne meeting. Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and why would
now
he have
what if
why
Batman
would he,
and Superman would fight each other?
Well, why would
oh
it be
my
any
gosh,
big deal?
That would be cool too.
Well, why would it be any big deal for Lex Luthor to meet Clark Kent? I mean, who is he? He's, you know, he's a reporter, and he's just started with the Daily Planet, so he hasn't even had a chance really to establish himself.
It seems kind of fanboy to me, like he was geeking out over it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Are they going to say anything about Clark and Lex's past? Because it feels like these two know each other, because if Lex is being a fanboy on this, it feels like Lex and Clark know each other.
I don't think so. I think Lex is probably just... Hey, this is a guy from this is a reporter from the Daily Planet. Daily Planet is the top newspaper in the area, and you know, depending on how long of a time frame we are looking at between Man of Steel and Batman V Superman, you know, maybe Clark has had a couple of really good days where he can pop out a story or two, and he's gotten up on Lex's radar, maybe. I don't know. Either that, or he's been working with Lois enough that, you know, he's in Lex's radar because he's in Lois's circle.
Yeah, that's the same effect I had when he says that line in the trailer was, okay, why is this a big deal to you?
Yeah.
It's a big deal to us, but why is it a big deal to you? Because I couldn't see the connection.
Yeah, but, well, and you know, it's like anything else. If you're going to do a sequel, and if you're going to do a story that calls back a number of elements from comic books and, you know, the history of all of these characters, then you have to establish some of that history in the movies in order to earn that moment. And they haven't done that, I don't think, in a lot of this.
It just goes back. It goes back to what Jeff was saying. They're just giving it all away. It gave.
Yeah.
The whole trailer was the whole movie.
I think,
yeah,
so.
No, I totally agree. It was the entire movie in 5 minutes, and it was very. Oh, we haven't even gotten to Wonder Woman, who makes her little appearance.
Right.
Obviously.
Right.
And oddly enough, I mean, that's the thing that I'm probably most excited about. Like, I really like the way they made her look. Mm-hmm. Even though I like my stars and stripes Wonder Woman, I like this warrior Wonder Woman that they have.
Yeah.
Well, she wouldn't really wear the stars and stripes yet.
No.
Well, I don't...
But I mean, she did originally as a peace symbol.
I think we'll see the stars and stripes in the solo film during the World War II set. I think we'll see that. And then she may change to something. She may change to this one in the modern era part of the stories. But, yeah, I think the stars and stripes will make their appearance in the World War II time frame of the story, and we haven't seen that yet, but we have seen her on set. We've seen photographs of her with Chris Pine in period costume, so we know at least part of that first solo story is set in the 40s.
How did her shield protect everybody from everything?
That's a good question. It's made out of vibranium.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or unobtainium.
Her
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Her little bracelet thing that she does that projects that force field type deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a new power.
Well,
okay. I haven't been reading the New 52, but is this canon?
Yeah, I wish it, who cares about canon at this point? I mean, really.
Well, she's the goddess of war in the New 52 now.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, here's what I'm thinking about that. I mean, the way that they have been holding back on Wonder Woman's presence in the movie makes me wonder, no pun intended, but it makes me wonder if she's got as strong a presence in the film as a lot of people are hoping. Because maybe, you know, maybe we get Princess Diana or Diana of Themyscira or whatever her, you know, Diana Prince, whatever her civilian is, identity is, we see that part, but she doesn't show up as Wonder Woman until the third act when Doomsday shows up. And then she realizes, hey, the boys can't handle it. And she shows up to save their bacon. And that's when Wally West kind of zips through real quick and Aquaman pops up. And suddenly we're into Justice League at the end of that. Yeah, because costume designer Mike Wilkinson has also said that Ezra Miller does have a cameo as the Flash in this movie.
Something tells me that the costume designer might not be working on part three.
Yes, it's like, Michael, shut up!
I agree.
Yeah.
He could never work for Abrams.
Well, yeah. No, you open the mystery box. You can't open the mystery box. I think, we're probably going to get, how many is that? 7 out of the 9? 5 out of the 7? We're going to get, so we've got Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Cyborg is in this movie. We haven't seen anything of him yet. Aquaman's in the film, so that's 6. The only ones that are missing are Green Lantern and Martian Manhunter.
And possibly Black Canary?
Yeah, maybe Black Canary. Yeah, that's right, because we've got a rumor that they're looking for a Black Canary for Justice League Part 1.
Does that mean we get Green Arrow in Justice League Part 1?
That's a good question.
I don't think the fans would be able to still have a connection with Stephen Amell. I'm not sure if they're going to be having a connection with this Green Arrow, whoever has, because that Green Arrow, who's going to be the actor who's going to be cast as Green Arrow, has his work cut up to him to convince fans that he's the Green Arrow.
Well, that's the same thing with Elijah Miller as the Flash.
You mean Ezra Miller?
Ezra Miller, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Well, I think this goes back to earlier discussions that we've had about the fact that they're keeping the film and TV universes separate. I think you're going to have the disconnect that you have between the film and TV productions also carries over to the disconnect between the film and the TV audiences, because as we've seen with the Marvel Universe, however many millions of people go to see a Marvel movie are not necessarily sitting down every week to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and they're not binge watching Jessica Jones. You have a more limited audience for the television product. And I think that's the same. That's going to be the case with the DC stuff. Now, granted, up until now, pretty much the television has been the only thing that DC fans have had outside of Man of Steel and the Dark Knight trilogy. But now that we've got Suicide Squad on the way, we've got Wonder Woman on the way, we've got Justice League, we've got Batman V Superman, all of these cinematic universe entries coming, it's going to be interesting to see how those numbers play out. But I don't think that the audience is going to sit there and go, wait a minute, that's not the same guy playing the Arrow, because most of them are not going to have seen the TV shows. And I think it's the same for the Flash.
You're going to have two camps, you know, and it's going to be whatever you were loyal to first. Like, there's going to be a lot of kids, you know, a lot of 13-year-old kids who might not like, the cinematic Flash, because they've grown to love Grant Gustin as Barry Allen.
True.
And are they having Wally West in the movie, or are they having Barry Allen?
The rumor is that Ezra Miller is playing Barry Allen. That has not been confirmed, but it is the prevailing assumption at this point. I think we've had that.
Yeah. And in the Marvel universe, it happened in the reverse. The movie came out first, and then Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came out, and then they brought, you know, Fury and Coulson and all those characters in and introduced new characters. And whenever they're talking about somebody from the movie, they come back as that character.
Exactly.
So now this is backwards. So it might be difficult for DC to do it backwards like that.
Well, to me, I mean, this whole movie itself feels like playing catch-up. I mean, this whole movie, I mean, we know that they've been trying to play catch-up for a long time.
But yeah,
this is just like, we're going for it, man. We gotta catch up with Marvel. And what Marvel did that I thought was really smart with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was they're like, hey, here's this side character in Agent Coulson that the audience really loved. Let's go around him. And we don't have to pay him a lot. He's not a big star. And now whenever we need Thor, we'll bring in Chris Hemsworth. Whenever we need Agent Fury, we'll bring in Samuel Jackson for...
Exactly.
Five days of work, which isn't going to translate into a ton of money as opposed to paying Sam Jackson $1 million per episode, 22 episodes a year.
Well, and I think to Sonya's point too, you're also, you know, bringing in actors who are established in those roles. Whereas with DC, if you've got two people playing Flash, I mean, the only way that you're going to have either of them together in one story is if you're doing a crisis, if you're doing a multiverse story. And they have not gotten anywhere close to earning anything like that.
You've got a major character in those shows, in those DC shows, that the audience has grown to love. Like you said, I mean, that guy's on the show every week. He is that character. So if you make a movie and you put somebody else in the role, I don't see audiences buying it or being happy about it. And it's going to be what Kendall said. They're just going to be force-fed it. This is the way it's going to be. Too bad. We're trying to do something here.
Yeah, suck on this, people who pay
over. Exactly. Yeah, it's like, this is what it's going to be. Too bad.
Well, and you can see the fan reaction when they announced Ezra Miller as playing The Flash on the day the series premiered on CW. It was almost like the film guys wanted to steal the thunder away from the show a little bit. And Stephen Amell even came out and said, hey, that was a rotten thing to do, guys. And it was, because your marketing works at cross purposes on stuff like that. But anyway, hey, what about, so we're talking about the you know, throwing the kitchen sinkin, and we mentioned Darkseid, the flying things in Batman's Nightmare. Could it be parademons, or could it be guys in flying exoskeletons, just guys in jetpacks or something?
I think it's a parademon.
I think it's a nightmare, and it could be.
It could be anything at that point.
By the way, that's Night with a K.
Yes. Yes.
Come on.
Well, now.
We need to at least be as clever as the people writing this crap.
It's not going to take very much. So that begs the question. If Batman is having a nightmare that involves parademons, has he encountered parademons at some point for his subconscious to put them into a dream? In which case, where are we sourcing that? Some people are thinking that maybe Lex might have some technology from Apocalypse that allows him to do what he does with Zod in order to create Doomsday.
Boom tube.
That's what all that lightning was, right?
Would they go to all this trouble just for it to be a dream? I mean, oh my gosh.
Oh, I wouldn't put it past him.
I'm going to think more of them.
No.
I've been thinking Scarecrow. If you're bringing in something like a nightmare, it has some. I think some kind of thing with Scarecrow to tie in the Nolan thing.
They're not going to tie in Nolan. I know everybody has been wondering about all of that. That's not going to happen. They've said this.
Why
from
not?
The get go? Because everybody associated with the project has said this has nothing to do with the Nolan universe. Because if it did, and yes, we've got that really long white paper theory out there that presents a case for why all of this is the case, but it's not going to be. That's not going to be, because Nolan himself has even said this is nothing to do with the original, with that trilogy. This is all brand new. It's not going to be connected. The other thing, you know, talking about this being a nightmare created by Scarecrow. I don't think that's going to happen either. Whether it's connected to Nolan or not, I think this is just going to be one of those imaginings. He could be saying, "This could happen if this remains unchecked," because you know he's going to be doing the voice.
I was wondering when that was going to come up.
Just imagine
voice thing.
If Superman goes unchecked, if nobody stops him, this could happen. And so he's narrating this, and this is what happens. This is just going to be some sort of an astral projection or something. It's not going to be anything that's going to be anything serious.
Gosh, I hope you're wrong. I hope you're wrong.
But
I hate it when they go to all that trouble and it's just a dream or it's just some figment of somebody's imagination.
Well,
I can't
to that point,
stand that.
To that point, so I got two words: sucker punch. The entire movie.
The entire movie
was dream sequences. So you know, that was Zack Snyder too. So I wouldn't put it past him at all.
Gosh.
It's the way it goes, right?
Demand my $7.50 back.
I don't know. I'm not looking forward to it, and I am sort of.
I am looking forward to it, and I was reading that article you'd posted. It was so funny. He says, "I'm looking forward to this goofy movie, and I hope it's 4 hours long." And I started laughing because, yeah, I kind of hope it's 4 hours long too.
to do everything they're going to do
to see if it could get better along the way. I'm willing to give it that much of a chance.
Speaking of getting better along the way, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about Gotham for a second, because I've got a point in the mid-season finale where I don't know how many of you guys have caught up. I know Jeff said he'd caught up, and I don't know, I think Jacob, are you caught up on Gotham?
I'm sorry. The Flarverse has captured me.
We're going to get into a little bit of spoiler territory here. I'm not going to get too far into it because Gotham is just pretty much a waste of time at this point. But I did catch up because I felt a little sense of obligation to know what was going on with that show.
Here's how we're going to play this out, because I, too, am a few episodes behind on Gotham. Okay, we are going to play the audience. We are going to play the part of the audience. You spoil it for us. And depending on my hand gestures that you see, Jason, is how I will feel about it.
Well, I'm not going to give away too much because, okay, you know, we are getting, yeah, it is, the mid-season finale just aired last week. And, of course, the internet is all talking about it. But there's a couple of places where I'm watching this. And you know, the entire time I'm catching up, I binge watched maybe about 7 or 8 episodes last week just to catch up. And for most of it, I was not impressed. For most of it, I was sitting there going, "Oh, I gotta watch another one of these." Now, one thing that I can say, David Mamouz is playing Batman. I'm not gonna lie, he is playing Batman. He's doing a really good job playing Batman, and I can see this kid 10 years from now putting on the cowl. He's giving that good of a performance as this young Bruce Wayne who's determined and he's logical and he's calculating and he's doing a really great job. And of course, Sean Pertwee as Alfred is just brilliant. But there was a moment in the mid-season finale when you have a group of characters that are walking down the street. You've got Jim Gordon and Harvey Bullock and a number of others. I'm not going to get into who they are because it would spoil the moment. But it's this crazy conglomeration of characters, and they're walking down the street in bulletproof vests, and they're armed to the teeth because they're going to go to that final confrontation, right? And it hit me at that moment. I'm watching this, and I thought, you know, really, Tim Burton needs to direct an episode of this show.
Oh,
because
yes.
Because this is this is the prequel to Batman 89. This is the prequel to Tim Burton's 2 Batman movies. It really does feel like that.
I love that theory.
I mean, it doesn't make it any better quality-wise, but it fits. it fits that tone. Because
at least you found where it belongs.
I don't know. Well, see, a lot of people said, this is Batman 66 Begins because it's crazy. But yeah, it really does feel like a prequel to Batman, to Tim Burton's Batman.
It's a good theory.
I don't like it any better, but you know. But, you know, the Live Plus 7 numbers have improved to the point where it's tied now with Supergirl.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah, Live Plus 7 numbers are tied. And Supergirl disappointed me last week. We'll get into that in a minute. But, yeah, it's I don't know, Gotham, if they keep going
for,
like this.
For the new people, what does that Live Plus 7 mean?
Live Plus 7 is a ratings measurement. Basically, live is the number of people that are watching the show when it first airs, whether it's on West Coast area, you know, East Coast feed. You got the live numbers. Those are the numbers that matter to the advertisers that are putting commercials in the show. Then you've got Live Plus 3 and Live Plus 7. And these are the people who are... Well, you got Live Plus Same Day, which is people who DVR, and they watch it that same day that it airs, just not when it actually airs on the network. Then you got Live Plus 3 is anybody that watches the show within 3 days of it originally airing.
Oh, okay, so it's the days. Okay,
and,
yeah, got it.
And Live Plus 7 is within a week. So okay. The Live Plus 7 numbers are what everybody looks at because Monday Night Football skews everything. Right. And this last week or two, I think Gotham and Supergirl have tied in the Live Plus 7 numbers. So Gotham's come up a little bit. Not by much, but just enough to matter, which means maybe it gets a third season.
Oh, God.
Well, you know, and now they've introduced Mr. Freeze. And B.D. Wong is about to join as Hugo Strange. We got the announcement of his casting here a few weeks ago. So, you know, they really are. They are going full Tim Burton on this show.
Listen, there's a reason why I'm behind on this show.
Yeah.
It's capable, but hysterically, like, my wife really enjoys it. And I'm just like, so I have to, now I have to, like, kind of, second guess a lot of life choices that I've made.
I totally understand what that means.
Well, I get that. And there's a couple of points in where you look at it and you go, it could be so much better. It could be good. I could see where it could be good.
We went through it last season when we were talking about different ways that you could make this a really good show, The Law and Order Gotham. You know, I mean, you could really do it, but they just told me to sit and spin. You know, I mean, it was like, this is ridiculous.
Well, and I think if they keep going on the trajectory they're headed now, where you get, you know, the full on dark comic book tone, like you got in Tim Burton's two movies, maybe it'll settle into some kind of a groove with that really fits what they're trying to do. It looks like they're moving away from the Law and Order Gotham stuff, and they're going full on into all of the Batman villains. You know, Penguin, Riddler, Joker, Mr. Freeze, Doctor Strange, Catwoman. And I gotta say, Cameron Bucandova looks so much like Michelle Pfeiffer. It is uncanny. And she's doing a really good job, you know, talent-wise, performance-wise. I see her doing some things. Her career is gonna take off when she grows up.
She's getting better.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say her, but she started off pretty not great.
Well, you're still behind.
I am still behind.
You're still behind. But she's done in these last two episodes. She put in some performances that kind of impressed me a little bit. Okay, so speaking of Supergirl, let's talk Supergirl for a second. The last episode with Red Tornado. Weak.
A little lackluster. I agree with you. A little lackluster.
It was probably the worst episode out of the whole set. Only and I said this in my recap. It was all very hand of the writer. This all happens because it has to happen in order for this to happen.
Yeah.
And it was so contrived. And Red Tornado didn't look like Red Tornado. I thought the design was crap.
Yes, the design was bad. The design looked like John Wesley Shipp era Flash villain.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Exactly, yeah.
The effects were rough.
Yeah, well, and the tornado effects, you know, they've perfected all of that over on The Flash, because The Flash has been able to do that same kind of thing. You got Weather Wizard and, you know, all that. But the Red Tornado himself didn't look like Red Tornado. I mean, if you want an accurate portrayal of Red Tornado, go look over at Young Justice. Oh, wait. You can't anymore. But Red Tornado is an android without a face. He's got a face plate. He doesn't have an identity because he's a robot.
Right.
And part of his story is, you know, finding himself an identity. And, you know, I know why they gave him a face, because you got an actor playing the part and he gets paid and you want to see his face. Okay, fine. But in this particular case, I think it was a mistake. And I think the Red Tornado that they came up with, the design looked like a very, very bad attempt at cosplay. And that's what a lot of people online were even saying. It's just like, hey, who's this cosplayer that Superman's mad at?
Yeah.
Or Supergirl, rather. So, I don't know. It just, you know, and somebody check this. Can people in the military just up and quit like Lucy did?
No, I don't think so.
Resigned her commission.
All that horse marshal.
I was just like,
I thought that was really weird. I was like, what? They can't quit?
You can't do that.
It's a court martial.
I know.
Isn't it a court martial? Well, I literally was like asking, like, okay, well, how far do you have to be up to quit? I mean, maybe she's got enough years in where she can retire. I mean, I went through this whole scenario in my head before I was like, oh, wait a minute. Okay, it's TV. It's TV. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, it's comic book logic.
It cracked me up because she walks up to her dad. She's like, I resigned my commission. And I'm like, you're in the JAG Corps.
Yeah. You can't do that. I know.
The whole thing
is a setup to put Lucy in National City all the time. I mean, the basic thrust of this episode was to show General Sam Lane is a jerk. He's a jerk to everybody. He's a jerk to Supergirl. He's a jerk to his daughter. He's a jerk to Jimmy. He's a jerk to the DEO. I'm like, wait a minute. I mean, the contrived logic in this episode was so contrived. You've got this prototype weapon that the military wants to test, and they're at the testing grounds. So that's point of origin. So this thing is designed, if something catastrophic happens to it, it's designed to go somewhere to fix itself. Mm-hmm. Well, doesn't it make sense that it would go to its point of origin? So if it's already at its point of origin, it wouldn't go anywhere. Or it goes to the lab where Morrow designed it first. So he'd be pretty easy to find. He either stays right there or he goes to the lab where it was built. And then this thing goes catastrophic and goes rogue. It doesn't have an off switch. It doesn't have a self-destruct button. You don't have some way that you can just point it and say click and it's off.
I didn't understand the whole, what was he, a general?
Yeah.
I didn't understand his stupidity.
I knew.
He was too dumb. I was like, this guy can't be a general. He's too dumb.
And then.
They're not that dumb.
And then he.
Are they?
Then this machine goes rogue and he fires the guy that built it before they can get it back.
Yeah, it's like you can't fire the dude. He's the one that built it.
It's like, wait a minute.
And then he like turns on Supergirl and says it's all her fault.
I said,
is this guy like four years old? He's throwing of this a tantrum.
Stuff, it's all what of this stuff to, and it's all made to, one, it's made to make General Lane look like a jerk, which would provide the motivation for Lucy to quit. And it also makes him the target because, you know, when Red Tornado becomes a drone and he's under the control of Morrow, he's targeting Lane because reasons. And, you know,
the reason was a fear. Because he fears what Supergirl could eventually do to him.
Exactly.
Because she's stupid, really?
Well, and the other thing This and really, you know, when you look at the dinner scene between Dad and Lucy and Jimmy, and Lucy goes off and Dad's sitting there with Jimmy and says, "You're not good enough for my daughter." That has a completely different layer attached to it because now you've got a black guy playing the character.
Granted,
they didn't play it that way. They didn't play it that way, but they could very well have done that because later on in the episode, you've got Jimmy. They even said in there's a line in the dialogue. He's like, you know, black men aren't expected to be mad.
He's a general. His daughter is that he takes pictures. That's where that was.
No, I know. That's all. I know.
That's what he meant by right. He's not good enough.
I'm just saying.
The guy takes pictures for a newspaper.
Right. I'm just saying there is the potential that they could have gone there, and I'm glad they didn't.
Well, either way, that whole scene was Lifetime quality.
Exactly.
No, Hallmark movie, not well, Lifetime. Hallmark.
And
Hallmark
makes
Hallmark.
And it makes Lucy more sympathetic, so she becomes friends with Kara because they're going to twist that love triangle. They're not going to make your traditional love triangle like everybody's expecting. I don't think. I think
I laughed out loud when Lucy showed up in her uniform. I don't know why it was funny. When she gets out, I laughed out loud because I don't know. She just didn't. She didn't translate, right? When she came. She looked. I was like, "What? She's that high up in the whatever she is? No, she's not got anything. That many ribbons." Yeah, she quit. But I mean. She just, I don't know, it didn't translate from this weepy girl that came chasing her boyfriend to this high-ranking official in the JAG Corps. I just kind of started laughing when I saw her next to her dad, and I was like, okay, this isn't very believable, but okay, let me give it a shot. And then she resigns, and it was just dumb.
Well, let me ask this.
It was like they had to give her, they had to make her really important and then take it away from her because they knew it wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
I have to go back and look. Wasn't she wearing a Navy uniform?
Yeah, it was a Navy. It was a Naval uniform.
She's in the JAG Corps.
JAG Corps, yeah.
So
Kendall said she was in the JAG Corps.
How would she be under the command of Army General Sam Lane?
It's her daddy.
Yeah.
Just do what her daddy says.
Yeah, but that's not how.
It's
that's
all
not
dumb.
How the,
it's
that's
dumb.
Not how the
it's
chain
all
of command
dumb.
Works.
Doesn't have to make sense. I was like, I gave it 15 minutes, and that was too much to think about that.
Yeah, this was definitely a step back on Supergirl. Although you know Melissa Benoist still.
Yeah, she's still rocking
it. She still delivers, and that moment at the end when she blows her powers out, the rage that she just projects on that. I think a lot of people are saying online that she just killed it.
I was hesitant on Supergirl. I didn't. I was really cold to the pilot. It's kind of won me over, and I'm not 100% sure how. Like Sally asked me, she goes, "Did it get any better?" Because she hasn't been watching it. Did it get any better? Because that scene I saw wasn't very good. I can't remember what scene it was, but did it get any better? And I was just like, "Yeah, it's really good." And she's like, "Why?" And I go, "I don't know." It's just enjoyable.
I think it's her. It's her. Yeah,
it is.
Her, and I like. I think it's because the things that I thought I was going to hate, I liked, mainly Calista Flockhart.
Mm-hmm.
I like
mm-hmm.
that.
Yeah.
I think Warner Brothers has or DC Comics one or the other. There's an opportunity here at the end of every season to put out a collection of Cat Grant-isms, you know, life lessons from Cat Grant, because we get some every episode.
Mm-hmm.
Where Kat is giving Kara and giving Supergirl advice, you know, career advice and boy advice and life lessons and whatnot. I think we just got to go through and just collect them all into this one little e-reader or something.
I really like how they were getting chummy. I like the relationship that they have before.
Oh, you didn't like the martinis?
I didn't like them having drinks and her kind of taking her under her wing. I don't know. I didn't like that. I don't know, and I can't explain why I didn't like it. I liked the distance and how she's really, you know, Kat's very distant from her employees and she's cold, and I like that. But I didn't like how she was being chummy, and I don't even know why I didn't like it. I just didn't.
Well, I think part of that is the if you look at the episodes as they were originally intended to air, you had the
right,
because
the bomb one got pushed back, right?
Yeah, you had that one get flipped with the Thanksgiving episode. And if you look at the the progression in those episodes, you have a little bit of warming between Kat and Kara, and the entry point for that is the relationship that each one of them has with their mothers. And the fact that Kara is an orphan and her mother died in a fire, you know, as she said in the Thanksgiving episode, the fact that, that there's not a big, strong relationship with Eliza Danvers as much as there is. And I think you get little bits and pieces that Kat starts to look at Kara as a real person rather than a piece of the furniture. And that maybe drinks, you know, commiserating it about mom over martinis might be a little bit too much at this point, but I can see that I can see this relationship going that way as a mentor protege type of relationship given enough time. Maybe they skipped ahead a little bit too much, but yeah, I can have an easy time buying it myself. Not to say you're wrong, but it's the, you know, it's one of those perception things.
Oh, no, I mean, I don't think it's a matter of right or wrong. I didn't like it. I don't know why. Just didn't like it. I liked that she kept her distance from the whole Kara. She was there to work, and I don't know.
Right.
It was different.
Well, we'll see how it progresses out. Yeah. Just to see, you know, I think, you know, you can only do the Devil Wears Prada just so long before you got to start adding some depth to Kat. So I don't know. We'll see how that plays out.
I agree with that.
Okay.
Maybe the depth. It just came too soon. I don't know. Maybe it came too soon. We'll see.
We'll see. And we're going to get to see more because we did get confirmation that CBS has ordered the back seven. So we've got a full season of Supergirl. It'll be a total of 20 episodes rather than the 22. And a lot of that's because it started so late in the year.
Yay.
But yeah, we got, instead of the back nine, we got the back seven. And with that comes the rumor that the Flash, Grant Gustin, could show up in a crossover episode. Now, before anybody gets too excited about that, it's not likely to happen because a couple of things. There are apparently some legal hurdles that have to be surmounted according to, it's either, I think it was Mark Guggenheim talking to Comic Book Resources, talking about the fact that there are some legal challenges to crossing over those shows. And I would imagine that it probably has to do with the fact that the networks are separate enough that you've got to do some clearances, maybe something not unlike what you'd have to do with Matt Ryan as Constantine showing up on Arrow. Yeah. But given the fact that CBS owns half of the CW, given the fact that Time Warner owns the other half of the CW, and Time Warner also owns Warner Brothers Television and DC Comics, I don't think it's going to be that much of a challenge for the left hand to talk to the right hand and say, hey, can we have that character for an hour? And given the fact that Greg Berlanti is the producer on both of them, I think it's just a matter of making sure that all the paperwork is in the right place for the Flash to show up. Although, I'm going to put this theory out there. I think it would be more likely for Matt Ryan to show up on Supergirl. And here's why. Because he's a free agent at this point. He doesn't have his own show, so you don't have to worry about crossover episodes. They've already done it with Arrow. And this would be an opportunity for the Wizard to show up on Supergirl and do a body switch episode so they get Freaky Friday between Kara and Kat, and mm-mm. Constantine has to come back in to undo it.
I'm really not feeling it.
That would be interesting.
It would be interesting, but let me just tell you this. I don't feel Constantine in Supergirl's world. Constantine right. matches perfectly with Arrow and with Flash's world.
Well, the Flash and Supergirl are of a tone. I mean, you could have, and Kendall, this goes back to what you're saying, one of the reasons why I think you like Supergirl. You could drop Christopher Reeve in costume into Supergirl, and he would be right at home. And I think that would be the same over on The Flash. You could have Chris Reeve as Superman on The Flash, and the tone is such that it would work. Arrow is getting lighter, so maybe in another year you could do it there. But yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I think a Flash Supergirl crossover would be more likely than an Arrow Supergirl crossover. And I make the joke that you could have Constantine show up. But yeah, I think if you played it right, you could do that, because they do all live in the same comic book universe in the publishing side of things. So it would just be one of those things where you'd have to figure out how to make it work. But yeah, I think a Supergirl Flash crossover is possible. I don't know that it's likely. It would be something to look forward to, but I don't want anybody getting their hopes up, because according to the producers, it's probably not going to happen this season. Unless the numbers need a boost, and then maybe CBS figures out some magic way that they can make it all happen.
I was going to say, as soon as things go bad, they always make things work. Suddenly something's easy to do.
Yeah. Well, and given the fact, given the fact that Gotham has come up in the ratings and tied Supergirl, maybe that's one of those things that that CBS is taking a look at and saying, well, Gotham's nipping at our heels. We need a ratings boost in May. Let's bring in Grant and do the crossover in May for Sweeps Month.
Yeah.
I can see that. That'd be a possibility.
That's where I'd do it.
Real quick, guys, I want to interject something here. I'm on a time frame, but I have to interject something here, and I want to get your opinion on this. Who do you guys think Hector Hammond is? Throwing canon out the window.
Hector Hammond. Oh, you mean Hank Henshaw?
Hank Henshaw. I'm sorry, Hector Hammond.
Hank Henshaw. Hector Hammond. Hector Hammond's in another movie.
Throw canon out the window, because I heard a pretty interesting theory on it, and I want to get your guys' opinion.
I have a theory on Hank Henshaw, but I'm going to wait and see what everybody else thinks first.
I have absolutely no theory at all.
I think Cyborg Superman.
I still think Cyborg Superman.
John Jones.
Well, okay. We've talked about this a little bit before. I don't think he's John Jones. I think he's Cyborg Hank. Let's do this, because they've been very canny about the red eyes and a display of powers and such, where it's still unclear whether or not he's John Jones or Cyborg. I'm not going to say Cyborg Superman, because that has to be based off of the death of Superman and the Cyborg coming back as Superman, pretending to be Superman. We're not going to get that story, but I think Hank Henshaw is a Cyborg. And given that we've just had a reveal that Dr. Jeremiah Danvers and Hank Henshaw went to South America to track down an alien, mm-hmm. and Hank Henshaw is the only one that came back, I'm theorizing that the alien they went after was Brainiac. And I think Hank Henshaw is a cyborg, either controlled by Brainiac or taken over by Brainiac. And that gets a Kryptonian computer device in Brainiac into this series and fulfills the whole cyborg Hank Henshaw part of the comics history of the character. And I don't think Dad is dead. Dr. Danvers is not dead. He's a prisoner. So it's very likely Brainiac is in South America.
They never are.
As soon as the words "presumed dead" came out of Wynn's mouth, I knew he's still alive. Because there's not a body.
To quote my husband, as we're watching this, his dad's dead. My husband said, "Whatever."
Yeah, he's not dead. Well, I mean, there's too much of an opportunity. There's too much of an opportunity there with Dean Cain, because you don't waste that. You don't waste
exactly,
him in flashbacks.
Exactly.
And Dean Cain's got nothing else going on.
Well,
no.
And when he
can't
comes,
be dead.
But when he comes back, that's the reveal of who Hank Henshaw actually is. And they've been really clever about how they've done this, because every time Hank uses his powers, he's close to some sort of a mechanical device. So that supports the notion of him being cyborg, but we never actually see him interact with the device. So he still could be John Jones. I know a lot of people like the idea of him being John Jones, but I don't think John Jones, an alien, last of his kind, could even pretend to be suspicious and prejudiced against other aliens. Because
yeah,
that's the core of Hank Henshaw. And I don't think that John Jones could play that as convincingly if he's faking it. I think Hank Henshaw could have that suspicion, maybe because he got attacked by Brainiac, or taken over by Brainiac, and Brainiac thinks that there's something wrong with biological aliens and he needs to fix things, or whatever the motivation is there. But I think Hank Henshaw is cyborg Brainiac Hank.
All right. Well, I like your theory too.
Thank you. We'll see how it plays out.
I got to get, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Kendall.
Catch you next week.
Have a good day, Kendall.
Bye, Kendall.
Bye, Kendall. Nice meeting you.
You too.
Nice meeting you.
Okay, so now we can get, since we've mentioned The Flash, we can talk a little bit about the Flash Arrow crossover last week that sets up Legends of Tomorrow. And it hit me last week that this is the largest number of costumed superhero characters on television since Adam West and Burt Ward were in Challenge of the Superheroes with Ed McMahon. And all of you are too young to remember that. Most of you are too young to remember that. There was a two-part thing. It was basically a roast, and you had Frank Gorshin was playing the Riddler, and Adam West and Burt Ward were back as Batman and Robin, and I don't know who was there as Shazam, Captain Marvel. Hawkman was there, Black Canary, Huntress, The Flash, I think, Green Lantern. It wasn't the Justice League pilot. That was a different thing. It was very, very terrible. But this was one of those things. You had so many costumed characters in the same show. And we haven't had that many. Smallville didn't even have that many at one time. This time we have Green Arrow, Speedy, Flash, Black Canary, Diggle, whoever he's going to end up being, that's five. You got Hawkman, Hawkgirl, that's seven. and then you've got Cisco Ramon, who's Vibe.
That's eight.
That's eight altogether. We didn't see Felicity with them. She's gonna. I still think that she's gonna end up being Oracle, because she's doing that job. And then we didn't see Firestorm in this. So, if they had been there, that would have been 10. But you've got eight.
Not to mention
Heroes.
Black Canary as well. And the Atom, that's 11 and 12.
Yeah. But, it's phenomenal to me that we are at the point now where not only are we getting this many costumed superheroes on TV, but it's actually good quality stuff for the most part. I mean, it's still got some quibbles, but I thought it was interesting how they merged Vandal Savage's origin with Hawkgirl and Hawkman's origin, because the original origin for Vandal Savage, he was a caveman that was exposed to the meteor, and in this particular origin, he's in ancient Egypt. So it still works. I like that they've tied in his life energy and all of this stuff with Hawkman and Hawkgirl, but Cisco, I think, had the best line. You're 0 for 206, and you still think you're her best bet. So yeah, it was a good crossover episode. The ratings were pretty good. It was a good setup for Legends of Tomorrow. I think we heard the theme song when Kendra sprouted her wings. I think we heard the theme song to the new show. Lots of elements, lots of stuff to unpack in these two episodes.
That episode, those two episodes alone were fantastic. It was just unbelievable having every single one of them together and seeing all these together. I'm glad they had Damien Dark in there, but I kind of wish there was like between the three villains. I kind of wish they had like a big scene with Zoom in it, with Dark in it, and Savage. And
well, I don't think that you could have put Zoom in because Zoom so far has been standing in the shadows in Flash Prime anyway. So, you know, until we actually get one or two episodes in a row with Zoom, you know, front and center, I don't think you're going to get anything there. And, you know, the delineation between the two, I think, was good because, you know, like Barry says, you know, the reason that they go to Star City is because Team Arrow has more experience with the mystical and the magic and all of that. If you start bringing that part into the Flash, I don't know that it would fit in the tone as well, because like you said before, we've got, you know, the tone, you know, Constantine fits in Arrow more than he fits in Flash. And I think there are certain aspects of the Arrow, the Flaroverse or whatever we're going to call it, that fit in the Arrow universe better than they fit in Flash. As long as you keep those things separate, because Flash is more the science and the you know, the gee whiz bang pow type of thing, and the Arrow universe can go a little bit more grim, dark, and mystical, and the magic side, it fits. So yeah, I don't know that I wasn't missing any kind of a scene between those three. Maybe you get a scene where Savage and Dark could interact. But honestly, I don't think that Savage would have even taken the time to do it. It would have thrown off the pacing of the show. But it also, I don't think, would have been necessary for... Because if the League of Shadows already knows how much of a threat Savage is, they're going to stay out of his way regardless. And Dark should probably already know that Savage is as much a threat as he is. So he wouldn't even have any reason to cross him. And then the other thing, there's some kind of a deal there between Malcolm and Savage that will bring him back in time for Legends of Tomorrow. I'm interested to see how that's going to play out.
Speaking of Malcolm, I loved the entrance that he and the League of Shadows made in Flash. That was a really good entrance.
Yeah, and Barry's reaction. Is this the only way he could show up? Yeah, it just appears out of thin air. For no reason at all. I think...
Speaking of villains...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of the former villains, I was surprised that they did not let the Arrow crew see good old Gridman. Good old Professor...
Wells?
Who was Reverse Flash?
Harrison Wells?
Good old Harry.
Yeah,
I was surprised they didn't...
I have a feeling that was more logistics than anything else. Because if you're going to move cast and crew from one set to the next, you've still got to move forward on the main thrust of the story for each show. And I think with Wells and Jay Garrick and Velocity 6 and Caitlin and that thread, that's something that you can shoot off by itself, and you don't have to have the actors there for the crossover elements. So you can do that part, and you can keep moving the Zoom storyline forward, separate and apart from what you're doing with the Legends of Tomorrow setup. And then the same thing over on Arrow, where you have the storyline with the kid now starting to play out, that part becomes a separate thing in and of itself that can move the Arrow storyline forward because of its impact that it's going to have between Oliver and Felicity, who looks like she's going to... die
speaking
next week.
Speaking of that subject, I'm a little surprised that he didn't, with even though he had Barry's warning about how badly this is going to turn out, I don't know why Barry introduced him to his kid, to Felicity or to Thea. Because wouldn't Thea like to have a little nephew to dot on?
Well, Oliver is one of those people, it's very easy for him to keep secrets. And secrets are one of... Yeah, granted, he's been told that there are going to be consequences. But Oliver is one of those guys, he thinks he knows better. I think that one of the consequences of him not telling Felicity, we're going to see next week, with Felicity becoming a prisoner. And whether or not she dies, I think, is immaterial. I think there are going to be consequences to the relationship. And it's going to be one of those things where Oliver realizes that if he had told her, things might have gone a little bit differently or whatever. You know, this whole time resets itself or whatever. But I think maybe, hopefully, I'm knocking on wood and I'm hoping that this is the setup for Felicity to become Oracle. Because we had her in an earlier episode complaining that she's the only one now who doesn't have a code name. And I think this is going to start playing toward that. There's been a couple of different missed opportunities where they could have done that already and put her in a wheelchair. But, you know, that hasn't happened yet. Do you think
Doc is going to be her Joker?
Oh, you mean in terms of causing the damage that makes her Oracle? Yeah, yes. Possibly. I mean, if they do that, you know, they've put her in a whatever this chamber is that takes all the air out. So, you know, maybe that causes enough harm that puts her in the wheelchair. But it's too soon to tell. That's just a theory that I've got.
And I'm not bringing back Manu Bennett because I could definitely see Deathstroke throw a sword into
That ain't going to happen. That ain't going to happen because Manu Bennett is still shooting the Shannara Chronicles over MTV and he's in Australia. So Deathstroke is off the table for the foreseeable future, as is most of the members of the Suicide Squad. So all of that's gone. I think if we get any kind of attack from villains, it's going to be Hive related because that's what they're playing with this year. It's not going to be League of Shadows. It's not going to be so much connected with Vandal Savage. It's going to be Damian Dark because he's the big bad guy for the year, for the season.
But we also just got announced that Calculator.
And he's
going to
burn the city.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't. I hope he doesn't burn the city. Say that again, Jacob. We got an announcement that who's coming?
Calculator is coming, who is possibly supposed to be Felicity's dad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't see Calculator as being a physically threatening villain as much as you would with somebody like Ra's al Ghul or Toyman even over on Supergirl. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I think Calculator could be a good nemesis for Oracle, but it's too soon to tell.
If they do that, I really hope they use the Gail Simone arc. The Gail Simone arc that they've been using in Birds of Prey with Calculator.
That's a possibility. Yeah, I mean, as long as they honor the source material, but they don't necessarily have to be faithful to it per se. I think we'll be okay. So we'll have to see how it all plays out. But yeah, I think this crossover episodes were a good setup for Legends of Tomorrow. And the poster that we got now that's got all of the characters on it looks pretty cool.
So, oh, yeah, it looks awesome.
We'll have to see how that
looks badass.
And that goes in what's the premiere date for that? January?
January 21st.
January 21st.
January 21st. I thought it was February.
No,
2nd.
January 21st.
January 21st.
They've moved Agent Carter, but they have not moved Legends of Tomorrow. So, yeah, January 21st would be the premiere date for that. We're coming up on mid-season finales for Arrow and Flash. And I don't know when Supergirl's mid-season. Gotham just played out their mid-season finale last week. So they're done until, I think, January. So it'll be interesting to see how long they give it before that show comes back. Because that show ended on a pretty crazy finale.
Yeah, it did.
I mean, that's just...
Not spoiling anything, but I like how they wrote in a certain thing.
How they wrote in... Between who?
Between Gordon and Leslie.
I know what you're talking about, and I didn't like that. I thought that was so tropey for them to do that. but yeah. And
I also just looked up January 21st, 2016. That is a Thursday, so we will have Flash on Tuesday. Well, we'll have Supergirl in Gotham on Monday, then we'll have Flash on Tuesday, then we'll have Arrow on Wednesday, and then we'll have Legends of Tomorrow on Thursday.
I was thinking that Legends of Tomorrow was running while Flash and Arrow were off.
That's what I was thinking.
Don't Arrow and Flash come back in March?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I think Legends of Tomorrow, I think we've got 10 episodes or 13 episodes there, and then Arrow and Flash are back for the back half of their seasons, I think starting in March. So
okay.
That's my guess. I don't know.
Well, when they run, they'll run all in a week, except for Friday. No superhero shows on Friday.
Not yet. But that's the death night, so we don't want any superhero shows on Friday, because that's where Constantine was, and Constantine didn't survive Friday. So, I don't know. I'm still waiting for Zatanna to show up somewhere.
Same with me.
Yeah, yeah. And she could show up in Arrow. You never know. But they're probably holding out and keeping her for Justice League Dark. So,
anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so any other final thoughts, favorite scenes, favorite moments, predictions or speculations or anything before we wrap up?
Speculations. I have a feeling that Dark is going to find out about Oliver's kids either during the season finale, part one, or somehow during part two. And I can't wait to see Mark Hamill's Trickster return to Central City.
Yeah.
That excited me for next week's episode of The Flash.
Actually, I think that is the mid-season finale for The Flash next week, is the Trickster and Weather Wizard, and who's the other one that's coming? Captain Cold. Yeah, so they're back all working together. So more rogues.
And then after Cold's defeated, that leaves a spot for him to go to Legends of Tomorrow, correct?
Right. Yep. All right. So
Heatwave will probably be in there somewhere.
Probably. Yeah, but he's not as big a player as Captain Cold is for whatever reason. They're not playing him up as much. But that'll be fun to watch, because Mark Hamill is always fun to watch as the Trickster.
Absolutely.
So Mark Hamill as the Trickster next week, and then the week after Star Wars.
Yeah. Isn't it just kind of fun how that works out?
Absolutely.
Great promotions.
Speaking of which,
sure, it wasn't planned at all.
Oh no! Now, did you guys see the Omaze video where Mark Hamill dressed up as a stormtrooper and was talking? He was walking around the streets of L.A. I guess they're giving away tickets to a premiere or something, and he was out, and nobody figured out that it was him. Of course, he's dressed as a stormtrooper. He never took his helmet off, but. It was kind of
fun to
see.
That might have been why.
Yeah, I was like, hey, who's your favorite character? Oh, I like Luke Skywalker. Mark Hamilton. Somebody said their favorite actor was Mark Hamilton. So
Mark Hamilton.
Yeah, that's on my mind. Okay,
they're so young.
Oh, I know. Have you seen the T-shirt? I was there at the beginning, and it has May 25th, 1977 on it. I'm thinking I might need to get that shirt, because I'm an old man and I was there at the beginning. Thank you very much. Now get off my lawn. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. Next week, more discussion of the DC filmed media. We might get into a little bit more rumor and speculation about the Green Lantern movie, as well as Wonder Woman. We've got first pictures from the set of the solo film with Gal Gadot and Chris Pine playing Steve Trevor and Steve Trevor. We've got that, and we'll talk more about Arrow and Flash mid-season finales and more when Rogues Gallery comes back for a new episode next week. I want to thank everybody for listening, and I want to thank my panel, Kendelson, who's already left, Sonia Rodriguez from Corpus Christi.
Thank you for having me.
And Fort Worth, Mr. Jeff Hackworth.
Thank you.
And Jacob Elyashar across town.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a great day.
And as always, we do invite you to leave your comments. You can join us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, Tumblr, and YouTube. And you could also send us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com, or you can call our hotline and leave a message there. It's area code 573-42-SCIFI. And we do invite you to check out all of the recaps for the shows. We write those. You can find those over at scififorme.com. And check out our other podcasts over on iTunes. You can check out our Marvel Comics podcast, Level 117. We talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, and the other Marvel movies over on that show as well. That's going to do it for us here, for all of us. Sci-Fi for me, my name is Jason Hunt. Thanks very much for listening. And we will be back with another episode of the Rogues Gallery next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.